following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the Upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning. I'm glad to be back with you all. Another chance to spend some time in one of the Psalms. I've been thinking a lot about this Psalm. Psalm 27 is where we're going to be this morning. As I was thinking about it, my mind actually went, yours wouldn't naturally go there, but my mind went to my dad. My dad danced, not always, but later in life, a long time after he and my mom were married. I remember I was back from college, staying with them over the holidays in Dearborn, Michigan, and Mom and Dad lived across the street from the country club, and on New Year's Eve, there was going to be a big band playing at the country club, and I asked my mom if she and Dad were going to dance. When I was younger, that is, in my early college days, I actually learned to ballroom dance. I taught for a while. I taught swing and foxtrot and waltz and all those kinds of things, and so I was asking my mom, were she and Dad going to dance at the country club? And she said, well, she loved to dance, but Dad didn't. So she said, no, we probably wouldn't. And that was surprising to me. So I caught my dad in the kitchen a little later on and asked him, I said, so Dad, Mom says that there's a big band going to be playing at the country club for New Year's Eve, and are you going to dance with her? And he goes, no, I don't really dance. And I said, Dad, I've taught linebackers on the football team to dance. So I think I could teach you to dance if you'd be interested. And he hemmed and hawed a little bit and then said, well, okay. So we went down to the basement, and there we cleared out a little room, and he had an old record player and found some Glenn Miller records. Glenn Miller? Some of you might know Glenn Miller. That's an old big band kind of band play. And so we put a Glenn Miller record on, and I spent maybe 10 minutes with him, showing him some very basic steps. And then he was like, that's good. That's enough. You can go. It's like, well, Dad, there's more. No, that's fine. You can go. So I left him downstairs. He was down there for about half an hour or so, and he and I never talked about it again. But on the morning after the New Year's Eve party, I asked Mom how it went. And she said, when the band started to play, your dad asked me to dance. And we got up and danced, and we danced every dance the rest of the night. And it was just, she just had a great time. It's not that he didn't know what dancing was. It wasn't even that he hadn't heard the music before and didn't know what the music was. It wasn't even that he never had a thought about dancing with Mom. He just never stepped into the experience of it. And once he did, wow, he loved it. And Mom said they continued to dance over the next few years. I've been thinking about that as I reflect on Psalm 27, where we're going to be this morning, as we continue in our series in the Psalms. David is sharing, he's writing, he's singing about his experience with the God he knows. And I want to walk through this psalm in such a way that we won't simply think about what he wrote about, that we won't simply pause and reflect on what he experienced and what God did with him, but I want us to find a way with the Spirit's help to enter into the very same kind of experiential life with God that David had. I don't want to simply think about dancing. I don't want to even think about the music. I want to actually understand how can we be involved in the kind of life that David talks about in Psalm 27. So that's where we're going to be this morning. If you have a copy of the scriptures, which is always good to bring a copy of the scriptures with you to church, we're going to be in Psalm 27. So let's read it through, and then we're going to unpack it in bite-sized chunks. Psalm 27. Of David. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is a stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers assail me to eat up my flesh, my adversaries and my foes, it is they who stumble and fall. Though an army encamps against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war arise against me, yet I will be confident. One thing I have asked of the Lord, that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. For he will hide me in his shelter in the day of trouble. He will conceal me under the cover of his tent. He will lift me high upon a rock. And now my head shall be lifted up above my enemies all around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry aloud. Be gracious to me and answer me. You have said, seek my face. My heart says to you, your face, Lord, I do seek. Hide not your face from me. Turn not your servant away in anger, O you who have been my help. Cast me not off. Forsake me not, O God of my salvation. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me in. Teach me your way, O Lord. Lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Give me not up to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and they breathe out violence. I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord. Be strong, and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. Now, David is reflecting as he starts this psalm. He's reflecting on some of the things that he's experienced with the Lord. He uses metaphors when he says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. That metaphor of light means I see life better because of my relationship with the Lord. He's the one through whom, by whom I can see clearly. And when he makes reference to God, my salvation, he's the one who rescues me. Clearly, David has had some experiences with the Lord. You know some of David's story, and clearly he has this journey with the living God. He's the one by whom he sees clearly. He's the one who provides David's saving experience. So he says, because of that, I have no reason to fear. No matter what comes my way, I don't have to be afraid. The God I know is my stronghold. He's my defense. The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? I have no reason to fear any of my enemies, he says. In fact, in verse 3, he says, when enemies do come against me, I've watched you overthrow them. You are my faithful protector. You've overthrown my enemies. We might not know the details of the battles and the struggles he's talking about, but in these first three verses, it's really clear David has experienced something of God's grace, something of God's goodness, something of God's deliverance, and he goes, for that reason, I'm not afraid of anything. I feel very comfortable in my relationship with him. Now, in verse 4, he raises his voice in a prayer, one thing I've asked of the Lord that I will seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple. Knowing this God that he's had relationship with, knowing his protective care, David says, I have one basic request. I'm going to seek after you. Now, we're going to come back and unpack that a little bit more. But you need to understand that seeing who God is and seeing what God has done, he says, this is the one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to seek after you. Now, why say that? Why is David interested in continuing to seek after the Lord? Pursuing him. Look at what he says in verses 5 and following. I'm going to seek after you because, verse 5, I know that you will hide me in your shelter in the day of trouble. He asks because as he's looking to the Lord, David knows that the Lord will hide him in his presence, that the Lord will lift him up, and the Lord will lift his head, and all of that then will give rise to his rejoicing. When he says in verse 6, I know my head should be lifted up and my enemies all around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing and make melody to the Lord. When he uses this language, he's obviously using a metaphor. When he says that the Lord is going to hide him in his presence, we're not exactly sure how David conceives of that, but this idea that because of my relationship with the Lord, he's going to be my protection, he's going to be my covering. When he says he's going to place me in a high rock, it's not like, I don't think David is thinking, I'm looking over all the mountains in Israel and then he's going to place me on the highest one. But he's using a metaphor that's saying, I'm going to be placed in a secure and safe place because of my relationship with the living God. And then when he says that the Lord will lead him into a safe place, he's anticipating what he's experienced in the first three verses. He's anticipating that's going to continue. The Lord is going to be the one who's going to provide for him and care for him. And the result is he's going to sing praises to the Lord. He anticipates this is what will in fact happen. In verses 7 and following, then, he offers more significant requests, filling in his requests to the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry aloud, be gracious and answer me. You have said, seek my face. My heart says to you, your face, Lord, do I seek? Hide not your face from me. Turn not your servant away in anger. O, you have been my help. Cast me not off. Forsake me not, O God of my salvation. For my father and my mother have forsaken me, but the Lord will take me in. Teach me your way, O Lord, and lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Give me not up to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and they breathe out violence. David is expanding what he's asking for the Lord to do. He wants to know the Lord, and he knows that the Lord is going to respond to him. He cries out and says, hear my cry, be gracious to me and answer me. He wants to know that the Lord is going to respond to him. He wants some kind of gracious answer. He picks up the Lord's call in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 29. God is speaking to the nation, and he says, seek me, seek my face. And David goes, I heard those words. I know you want me to seek you. I'm going to seek you. I'm going to pursue you. David says that's what he is doing. And he says, seeing as I'm doing that, seeing as I'm seeking your face, doing what you've asked of me, then don't hide your face from me. Don't make it hard for me to find you. Don't turn from me in anger. Do not abandon or forsake me. These are all different ways of David speaking of what he doesn't want. Don't turn your face from me. Don't treat me with anger. Don't forsake me. That's not what I want, because I want to seek you. You've called me to seek you. I want to seek your face. And in contrast to those things he doesn't want, David says, I am going to pursue you. I believe you will hear when I cry. It's not quite clear what he means when he says, for my father and my mother have forsaken me. Perhaps his parents have died at this point. But he is confident that the Lord will embrace him and take him up. So he's crying out to the Lord, anticipating the Lord is going to respond. It's not enough for David to simply be rescued from trouble. In verses 11 and 12, he expands on that request. He says, so teach me, lead me. He wants to continue to grow in his experiential life with the living God, seeing as the Lord is his sanctuary, his refuge, and his stronghold. He beseeches the Lord to teach him and lead him so that he can continue to experience that. It's how he will find his way into the presence of the Lord. It's how he will be delivered from his enemies. And then in verse 13 and 14, he closes the psalm out, affirming what he believes. I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. He's anticipating that God will in fact meet him, not just in eternity, but in his present experience of life. God will meet me here. I'm crying out to him. I've experienced it. I'm anticipating he will. And then he closes with, in a sense, a word to his own soul, perhaps in a word to those who are learning to sing the song. So then wait. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for him. He will be there. He will respond. So, there we have a basic walkthrough of Psalm 27. But I read this and I have to ask, so what of it? I understand some of what David is saying here. What do we make of all of that? Why does David sing this song? Why share it with us? What does he want for us as we learn to sing this song with him? What should we long for in hearing this song? I'm going to turn my attention back to what I think a couple of verses that become the hinge for what's going on in Psalm 27. Look with me, Psalm 27, verse 8. God says, you have said, seek my face, and my heart says to you, your face, O Lord, do I seek. And then also verse 4, one thing I have asked of the Lord, that will I seek after. Notice, I'm seeking your face, there's one thing I'm seeking after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, and to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire or meditate in the temple. God has invited David and others to seek his face. And David affirms, that's what I'm intending to do. I'm going to pursue you. I'm going to seek your face. In that seeking, David states that there's just one thing I'm after. Now, he states it in a variety of ways. There's some parallel thoughts here. When he says, to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. No, you need to remember that the temple wasn't built at this time. There's a tabernacle, but there's no temple, so in a sense, there's not yet a house of the Lord. So when he says to dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, what is he talking about? That language of dwell means to be at home with, to be intimately in community with the Lord. So he's saying, this is what I'm seeking after, to be present in your presence all the time, to experientially be at home with you, Lord. to refer to God's house or God's temple or the tabernacle. They're all ways of speaking about where God's presence is experienced. That is what David is seeking, what he is earnestly and purposely pursuing, an ongoing experience of the presence of God in his life. And he says, in that seeking, my desire is to gaze or behold your beauty, to see, to grasp, to recognize, to acknowledge, to experience how glorious God is, to inquire of the Lord in his temple, or to, some translations render it, to meditate, to think, to reflect on him, God himself, to meditate on him, the Lord himself. Where David encounters him, David wants to be there, attentive to the Lord who meets with him. Now, when I look at verses 8 and verses 4, two things stand out to me as I reflect on what's at the center of this psalm. First, David's focus is on a person. You can't miss that. His focus is on a person. It's a someone. He is seeking a someone, the Lord. He wants to behold someone, the Lord. He wants to be at home with someone, the Lord. His cry is not merely to know things about God. He wants to have face-to-face intimacy with the Almighty. And if that's what David is focusing on, it means that he is looking to experience something with this someone. This is not just a grasp of truths about God. David is seeking, longing for, pursuing a personal encounter, an experienced moment or moments in life with God. And that takes my breath away. He seems to think that such a prayer, such a pursuit is appropriate, and it's a prayer that the Lord will answer. I'm seeking you. I intend to see you. I want to experience you. And he anticipates that he will have that kind of experience. It's like my dad, who knew about dancing, knew about music, had even thought about dancing, but he had never actually danced until that evening. And the sad thing is, I think we can all too easily settle for knowing about the Lord, knowing there's a personal relationship with him possible, think that having such moments would be wonderful, and we never enter into the experience of having those face-to-face encounters with the Lord. We don't seek him as someone to behold, to experience, to dwell with. We just know it'd be really nice to dance. I've just never done it. It'd be really nice to have those kind of experiences. I've just never experienced that. To understand Psalm 27 well, it's to be able to sing it properly and enjoy it rightly. We can't just think that relationship with the living God is possible. It's an invitation to experience this life. You have said, seek my face. My heart says to you, your face, Lord, I will seek. One thing I've asked of you, that's what I'm going to seek after, that I may dwell in your house, in your presence, Lord, all the days of my life, so that I might behold, gaze, see you, Lord. That's startling to me, because we talk about having a personal relationship with the living God. I think sometimes when we talk about a personal relationship with living God, we talk about it like my invisible friend George. I might tell you, I have an invisible friend, George. And you might go, an invisible friend, George? Yeah, George. George and I are good friends. He's my invisible friend. And you might ask me, so you have an invisible friend named George? Tell me about that relationship. Well, yeah, there's this, George is there, and I have a relationship with him. And you might ask me, so do you talk to George, and George talk to you? And you go, no, I never actually talk to him. I just know he's there. You know, I tell myself he's there. So you never actually talk to him, and he never talks to you? No. But you have a personal relationship with an invisible friend named George who you talk to, and he never talks to you, but you have a relationship with him, right? Yes, yes. Oh, so there must be things that happen in your life that you look at and you go, I didn't do that, George did that. You know, there's something that happens that's unexplainable apart from the presence of George in my life. And I would look at that and go, no. I do the things I think George would want me to do. But there's nothing in my life where I kind of go, George actually did that. I do the things that I imagine George would want me to do, but no, I can't look at anything and go, George did that. So Brian, you're telling me you have an invisible friend named George who you talk to and he never talks to you, and you do the things that you think George wants you to do, but he actually never does anything in your life, and you have a personal relationship with him. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You might then ask, so Brian, are there times when you experience George's presence in your life? And I go, ooh, that's just weird. No feelings, no weird, no, nothing like that. No, but I know he's there. I tell myself that he's there. And so you would ask me, so Brian, you're saying you have a personal relationship with your invisible friend George, and you talk to him, but he never talks to you. You do things that you think George wants you to do, and he never does anything for you, that you would go, George did that. And although you tell yourself that he's there, you never experience or feel anything of his presence, and you have a personal relationship with him. And I say, yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. I have a personal relationship with my invisible friend George. And if I explained it to you that way, you could rightly say, hey, Brian, having a personal relationship with an invisible friend named George is like having no relationship at all. It's just a concept. No relationship. David's not there. When he's talking about beholding the Lord, seeing the Lord, dwelling in the Lord's presence, he's talking about experiencing the very presence of the living God in his life, and that's the foundation for Psalm 27. Let me suggest a few things based on this psalm that might open the way for us to experience a little bit more of what David is talking about here. First, David realizes he has senses by which he can perceive the Lord and experience his presence. He has senses by which he can perceive the Lord and experience his presence. When God says, seek my face, he says, I'm going to seek you. The implication is, I can do that and I can see you. I can find you. He has spiritual senses by which he can perceive the real presence of the living God. I know that weirds some of us out. You have senses by which you can perceive spiritual realities. David writes in another psalm, taste and see that the Lord is good. To suggest that you can taste and see the Lord means that you have senses of your soul that can experience, taste, palpably know the presence of God. If in fact you don't think you have any spiritual senses with which you can perceive God's real presence in your life, then you know you're going to be just left with knowing stuff about God and never actually encountering him. Such a call to taste and see the Lord, such a call here in Psalm 27 makes no sense if we don't have spiritual senses that can perceive God's presence in our lives, personally, palpably. You might think, oh, so Brian, you're talking about dreams or visions or hearing voices. Maybe, could include that. But it's not necessarily what I'm talking about. I'm not suggesting that we will see the Lord with our physical eyes. But if there is no way that we can perceive and know his real presence with us, then David's pursuit is nonsensical. God says, seek me. David goes, I'll seek you, and I'll never experience anything, and I'll never find you. That makes no sense. To say, I want to behold you. You can't do that because you have no senses by which you can perceive the presence of the invisible God. Well, I'm going to make no sense whatsoever. He recognizes, and I need to recognize, and you need to recognize that you have spiritual senses by which you can perceive the presence of the Lord in your life. Because otherwise, this pursuit is nonsensical. It makes no sense. It's like my invisible friend George. In the upper room in John chapter 14, Jesus says, if anyone loves me, he will be loved by the Father, and I and the Father will come and make our home with you. You won't know it. You won't ever experience it. You'll have to tell yourself that's true. No, to talk about making their home with us, the implication is this is something you can experience. I know the presence, the real presence of God in my life. In Paul's letter to the Ephesians, he's praying for the Ephesians, and he prays that the Father might strengthen you in the inner person through the Holy Spirit so that Christ himself might be at home in your heart. You have people you visit and invite into your house. You tell them to make themselves at home. Do you know that they're there? Do you experience their presence? Of course you do. That's what Paul is praying for, that Christ would be at home in our hearts. That would have to be something to be experienced, to be known. John writes in his first epistle, 1 John, he says, I have fellowship with the Father and the Son. In 1 John chapter 1, he says, I knew him, I saw him, I had my hands on him. He's talking about his in the flesh experiences with Jesus in the days of the incarnation. But he's writing in 1 John chapter 1 and says, I still have fellowship with the Father and the Son. He doesn't go, it used to be really nice because I saw him and heard him and felt his presence. And then after the ascension, that was gone. No, he says, I still have fellowship with the living God. I perceive, experience, know his presence with me. All these passages refer to something that is experienced, palpable, known. So the first thing I observe out of Psalm 27 is that David seems to be aware that he has senses by which he perceives the real presence of God in his life. The second thing I note is how intentional and purposeful David is. Notice the language. I'm going to seek you. I'm going to pursue you. I'm going to behold your beauty. I'm going to dwell in the experience of your presence in my life. I'm going to set my mind and heart to meditate and think about your real presence in me. I'm going to live in those encounters. I was trying to get my mind and heart around that because I read this and I go, we don't talk this way. David talks this way. I was trying to get my mind and heart around these ideas, thinking that David is longing for this experienced encounter with someone, the Lord. And I began to reflect on how I encounter or experience other someones. A couple of thoughts came to mind. There are times when I'm in our house with Sue, my wife. She's here this morning. I know she's somewhere in the house, but I'm not experiencing her presence. I'm conscious of the fact that she's there, but I'm not fully aware of her and her presence. But if I seek her, and that doesn't necessarily mean getting up and going to look for her in another room, but if I'm actually attentive, if I just listen, I hear her in the room, I hear her in the house, I experience her presence as she passes by the room, and I become aware of her presence. I am now dwelling with her in the house. It's different than acknowledging she's there and experiencing her presence. Perhaps you've had the experience of being with someone and talking with them, and you notice they seem 1,000 miles away. They're right there with you, and yet you think they seem 1,000 miles away. They are there physically, but not consciously present in the moment. Their mind and hearts have wandered. Their mind and hearts turn to something else, and they're far away from that moment. David doesn't want far away from that moment kind of experience with the living God. I remember when my daughter was much younger. I was sitting in the living room and I was reading, and Kirsten, my daughter, was playing. And she said, Daddy, look. And I looked over the top of my book. Oh, yeah, hi, sweetie. I looked, put the book back up, continued to read. She cried out again. Hey, Daddy, look. Yeah, I see you. A few minutes later, she walked over to where I was sitting, climbed up in my lap, pulled the book down, put her hands on both sides of the face, of my face, and said, Daddy, look at me. She wanted me to behold her. She wanted me to not just be in the room with her, but actually experience presence with one another. Now, the Lord is not like that. Doesn't put his hands against our face and says, look at me. But that's what we should be doing, seeking an experience with the presence of the Lord. In fact, friends, if you know God, you have had these moments. You may not recognize them as such, but you've had these moments where you do experience his presence. But we're not always aware of what's going on. There are times when you're worshiping, and all of a sudden, in the moment of worship, You just really are singing out. And you're not exactly sure what's going on, why it's happening. And you go, it's just a song. So I really like John's voice. Or that's a fresh song for me. No, Paul writes in Galatians and says, because of this new life with Jesus, the Father sends the Spirit of his Son into our hearts, and our hearts cry out, Father, because of the Spirit's work. Do you understand what I'm saying? You do experience the presence of God. You have senses by which you experience the reality of God's presence, and we ignore those. We go, no, it's just a nice song. No, your heart was stirred because someone is there. You're experiencing someone's presence in your life when those moments happen. but we don't cultivate it. We don't lean into it. We're not attentive to it. Someone is there. That's why your heart is stirred in worship. I remember some years ago, a man came to see me. Oh, my goodness. He had an affair with someone at work, resulted in losing his job, having the woman lose her job, having his wife say, "We're done." She wanted to divorce him. He came to see me and asked me, what can I do to fix this? I don't know. You've just wrecked your entire life in whimsical, fancy stuff, right? So we talked for a couple hours. And I continued to pray and I continued to think. And it was like, I couldn't think of anything next steps for him. So as we're talking, I feel like the Spirit helped me here. I asked him, he was a believer, so do you pray? Yeah, I pray. Apparently you haven't been, but now I'm asking him if he prayed. Yeah. And I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you, when you go home tonight to your apartment rather than your house, I want you to sit in a chair and I want you to pull up an empty chair in front of you. And I want you to imagine Jesus being there. Now, your imagining doesn't make him there. He is present with you. Jesus told his disciples, I'm never going to leave you. I'm never going to forsake you. I will be with you until the end of the ages. So imagining Jesus in the chair isn't going to place him there, but this is really going to help you, I think, engage with the presence of Jesus in your life. I want you to imagine Jesus sitting across from you in the chair, and you need to just start talking with him about how you've wrecked your life, ruined everything, and unless he delivers you, rescues you, saves you, makes himself known to you, you have no hope. And I asked him, can you do that? He kind of rolled his eyes. Yeah, I can do that. Okay, good. You do that, and then call me in the next day or two, and we'll set up another appointment, and you can come back in, and we'll talk some more. So he left. I kind of desperately prayed because I was fearful. Nothing's going to happen. He'll think I'm a terrible counselor. How wicked was that? That I was thinking it was more about me. No, I initially thought that. It's like, Lord, you have to do something because I don't want to be seen as a fool. But then I realized that's not really the best prayer to pray. I want to pray that the Lord does something because he needs the Lord's help. Well, a day went by, a couple of days went by. He hadn't called me back. 3 or 4 days went by. I thought, yeah, he's going to look for help somewhere else. But then he called me like 5 days later. I said, Brian, I'm really sorry I didn't call. I've just been really busy. I just want to let you know the first day that I did that night when I went home and I sat down and I imagined Jesus in the chair and I began to talk with him, he said, something really happened. I've been doing that every day since then. Can I keep doing that? Yeah, you can keep doing that. What was going on is he was experiencing the very real presence of the Lord. The imagining didn't make it happen. But David is intentional. I'm going to seek your face. I'm going to act like you're present with me. I'm going to talk with you. I'm going to pursue you. I want to behold you. I want to experience you. And sadly, sometimes we're just comfortable with Jesus being our invisible friend. Psalm 27 doesn't lead me there. I don't want to leave you there this morning. Just hearing the words of Psalm 27. So here's what we're going to do. In a few minutes, we're going to take communion.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you, so we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.